Wendy Burdon is the great-great-great-great-granddaughter of Cornelius Vanderbilt. She spent much of her childhood with her grandparents, with all of the trappings of enormous wealth, mansions, servants, and, for her brother at least, a pony. But before you're consumed with envy, be aware that she thinks that indulged life, which was also quite eccentric at times, had some enormous drawbacks. Her memoir, Dead End Gene Pool, is the often hilarious story of that very privileged and still peculiar life. It's published by Gotham Books, and I'm very pleased that it brings Wendy Burdon to our show today. Hello.
Hi.
Is it true that you hadn't set out to write a memoir?
No. I actually started out writing a cookbook. I'd had a restaurant in Seal Harbor, Maine, a French bistro, and I set out to write a cookbook.
Well, later we'll talk about some of the food that you ate as a kid. I hope that it wasn't your restaurant served different kinds of food.
It's French food. So similar, but no, different.
It comes as a great relief to someone like me who grew up extremely poor to learn that the kind of wealth you experienced was not all that much fun, but it must have been a fair amount of fun nonetheless.
It was hugely fun. I mean, the perks were great. The real estate was amazing.
A chauffeur took you around wherever you
wanted. That wasn't so fun because he didn't like us very much. But we were largely ignored, and I think that wealth sometimes contributes to that.
As a kid, were you aware of your station in life and how different it was from the rest of the
population? I was very aware
because
I spent huge amounts of time with my grandparents, and I was actually embarrassed about it because I would go back during the school year. I'd go back to my regular house in Washington, D.C., and people would ask me where I'd been, and I would be reluctant to tell them because their lives were so different from mine.
You actually believe that the chauffeur was a former Nazi?
No. I mean, when I was that age, I did, but...
No, I realize now you don't.
No, good, and in reading back over that, I thought, oh, no, I hope he doesn't, you know, I hope people don't think that he was a Nazi because he wasn't. He was probably a really nice man.
Well, no life is perfect. Every kid has positive and negative experiences. What were the downsides as far as you were concerned?
Lack of affection, lack of direction within the family and in how one was supposed to behave, support. I mean, I found my support and love through surrogate families.
Well, why was there all this lack of affection? There are wealthy families that are affectionate, aren't there?
Yes, but this is a dysfunctional family, and one of the byproducts of dysfunction is alcoholism, withdrawal, substance abuse, strange behavior in general, and it was obvious.
Well, that's because of all the money. It starts off with Cornelius Vanderbilt, a man, one of the great robber barons, maybe the most notorious because he had a way of destroying all the competition.
He did. He obliterated them. And he also was a man not known for his affection or his manners or personality.
How many children did he have?
I think he had 13. I can't remember off the bat, but he had a lot.
So he had 13, and then they had kids.
They had kids. Everybody had kids. And
does the money thin out at a certain point?
Well, it didn't for a while. His son William inherited the bulk of his fortune. And when Cornelius died, he was the richest man in the country. And when his son died, he was the richest man in the world. So clearly he was doing something right. And then when my great-great-grandmother, who was the Vanderbilt, she doubled her money after she got married. And then we really started to spend it, at least on my side. So that's when it started to thin out.
But your grandparents still had quite a bit.
They did, but they spent it. My grandfather didn't really make money. I mean, he might have made some with investments, but he gave most of his art to the Museum of Modern Art, which is how he would have really garnered some money. He had some incredible art.
And what about your father?
Well, my father died when he was 30, so...
How old were you?
I was 6. Mm-hmm. And my father would never have been a big money maker. He was a reporter. He was involved in the news and also with foreign policy research.
How did you learn that he died?
My brother, he was 7 at the time, overheard a phone call and came and got me. It was at night, and brought me downstairs. And there were policemen in the room, but nobody really told us. And then the odd thing was, sort of the tragic thing, is nobody really made a deal out of it, not even a big deal. And we went to school the next day like nothing was wrong.
Did you ever find out the circumstances?
I did. We were told it was a car accident, and certainly he had shot himself in his car. But I came across a newspaper cutting when I was a little bit older. I mean, not much older. And then as I became, you know, older and started to really ask questions, then my mother would tell me. But generally, she was fibbing in some way.
So he was bipolar, is that?
Extremely bipolar, and it runs in my family. There's a lot of bipolarism in my family.
Your mother doesn't seem to be the most stable person either.
No, in fact, in the deposition that my grandfather gave after my father died, and I read it recently, which is, it figures pretty largely towards the end of the book, apparently when my father finally went to see a psychiatrist, the psychiatrist said, no, it's your wife who needs to come in and talk to me.
Well, she was well-educated.
Very.
But she did have some strange habits, especially eating habits, almost trailer trashy.
Well, I think you could also say it's the eating habits of a woman of the 50s, 60s, and 70s who wants to be attractive to men, and it's like anorexia. She lived on those diet candies, AIDS, and everything dietetic. I can never say that word correctly.
And diuretic.
And diuretic, yes. And a lot of alcohol.
But she also ate Spam, iceberg lettuce.
That was her indulgence, Spam, or the drippings from the roast beef pan. Iceberg lettuce is not an indulgence. I mean, it's basically water. But the amount of chemicals she put in her system with the low-calorie stuff, I mean, they were hugely carcinogenic then.
How had your parents met?
They met when they were at Milton Academy. She was a day student, and my father was a boarder. And they were married when they were at Harvard.
Was she impressed by the family wealth? Or wasn't there much family wealth at this point?
Oh, no, there was plenty of it. I think she was overwhelmed to the point where she probably didn't say a word.
Well, she wasn't exactly poor.
No, but she was very middle class. Mm-hmm. My grandfather on that side of the family was a scholar, and he'd been a colonel in the Army.
Did she get along well with your grandparents?
Not at all. And especially after my father died, it was they just hated her. I mean, they really started a hate campaign against her because they blamed her for my father's death.
And then she wound up leaving you and your brother with your grandparents.
Yeah, she basically did whatever she wanted until she got remarried, and then she was kind of a prisoner. But
so you were just pretty much left. Your grandparents were not doting grandparents.
They were doting in as much as they were just from another era, and to have these children with you when you're a generation ahead, I think it's hard to know what role to play. But they certainly adored us. They just didn't know how to handle us. They could barely, I mean, they didn't raise their own children very well. So my father and his brothers were all raised by nannies and governesses.
My guest is Wendy Burden, who's written a memoir called Dead End Gene Pool, published by Gotham Books. Dead End Gene Pool because, in a sense, the blood thins as from generation to generation?
Yes, I mean, I think partially from inbreeding, and the way a certain race of animals will somehow just breed themselves into extinction because they don't take in outside forces.
Do you think, in many cases, people just don't do any work, as you said, but in other cases, they rebel.
Yes.
Could we say that you are one of the rebels?
Well,
I mean, you were an art director at a porn magazine at one point.
Briefly.
Yeah. I know, fired for being too tasteful.
Within 3 months, and nobody was happier than me, believe me. Yes, I rebelled because I didn't do what they wanted me to do. For example, my grandfather said, well, you're not allowed to go to Cornell University. Well, it hadn't really occurred to me, but as soon as he said that, I said, oh, okay, I'm going there.
And why not Cornell?
Because my brother wanted to go, and my brother couldn't get in.
And they preferred your brother.
Yes.
That must have been a problem.
It was a huge problem. The whole, from the pony on, Boys were, it was like a very traditional old Chinese family where girls are just meant to sort of procreate, and the boys are the ones that you put your hopes and dreams into.
Your dedication is, for my mother, goddamn it.
Yes. First of all, that was her favorite saying. Mm-hmm. Everything was, you know. But also, one of the reasons I dedicated it to her is I started writing the book thinking that she was really the guilty one and my father was the innocent one. And by the time I finished it, I realized that he was as much to blame. And I don't think she could have really, because of her biological makeup, I don't think she could have acted much differently.
Now, you did grow up in this privileged home where they had a private chef.
Yes.
Did that lead to your interest in food?
Oh, very much so. Plus, I love to eat. So the combination of the two.
But the chef in Maine bit you.
Yes, and I don't see it as sort of sexual harassment. Some people have asked me that. I think that's he was just so excited that I had shaped this little tortellini perfectly that maybe that's what they do in Italy or wherever he came from.
A show of affection.
Extreme
but
affection.
All of this does explain to some degree why you became obsessed by the Addams Family.
Yes.
you recognize a family as eccentric as your own?
I recognized it
as ghoulish.
Ghoulish, and I was obsessed with death and sort of and at the same time Creepy Magazine was big, so it was almost a genre that kids got into, but I think I became fascinated with death because of my father, and it was a way to sort of justify it or not be frightened by it. The Addams Family seemed like they combined that with they were a loving, tight family. I took them on mentally.
Well, your mother, who you dedicate this book to, did seem to have bad taste in men. There was an arms dealer at one point?
For a long time. And he was an international arms dealer, Peter Beer, and that's why we moved to England. And she, even after they were divorced, she was caught having an affair, and he kicked her out, gave her 24 hours to leave the house in England.
She didn't realize it's dangerous to have an affair with somebody who has a lot of weapons around?
You would think she would have. I mean, this is a woman who got her doctorate in philosophy from Oxford University, but she had no sense. I remember asking her how on earth she could have been with this man, because I found him horrific, and she said that he was the most exciting man she'd ever known.
Mm-hmm.
So, go figure.
Well, how did this affect you and your personal relations? I mean, you're not getting too many good role models here, and you're growing up with grandparents who will not talk about anything personal.
I adopted people. I adopted families. Like in the book, I talk about this, the Dorans from England, and they really helped me, and I continued to do that throughout my life. I have a habit of going for men that can provide something that I can't. I don't have a lot of social ease, so I'm attracted to, in the past I've been attracted to men who are very at ease socially and life of the party kind of guy.
Well, when you grow up in that kind of society, even if all the money has gone from your family, you generally can network with other people who have money. Is all the money gone, by the way?
Personally, yes, for me. It's pretty much gone on our side, I would say. On the other side, I think that there are people who actually have jobs, and they're making money, and they've invested better.
I was going to ask you if you think this book has helped you excise your ghost, but then there's that whole matter of your mother contacting you from beyond the grave on your Facebook page.
Yes. I wrote a thing about it. Dead Mom Talks Through Facebook. It has. Writing the book definitely helped me just assimilate everything in my head and figure it out. And there's always going to be something to write about in my family. Witness the dead mom thing.
Do you think that for poor people who envy the wealthy, that this book is any kind of solace, or is this just simply one family that has gone astray? Have you spoken to other families, some of the other robber baron families? Do they have similar stories?
I haven't spoken to them. I didn't grow up knowing people my age from other families that were wealthy. I really never had wealthy friends. The book wasn't intended to be solace. I wanted people to see that the wealthy are not much better, that they have just the same problems.
Wendy Burton's memoir is called Dead End Gene Pool. It's published by Gotham Books. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.